Well, I see. You've lived in Havre de Grace all your life?
Oh, but about 6 years I went to Balmerton School in 1918. And stayed there with my uncle in the funeral business and came to Havre de Grace in 1924 and opened a business of my own. So I've been here since 1924. Same address.
Let's see, what were your... Were your parents in the funeral business?
No, my father was a farmer. And I was raised at Mount Felix. That's on 155. And from 1908 till 1918, I helped my father drive a milk wagon to Havre de Grace, where we delivered 85 or 90 gallons of milk before I went to school in the morning. He put me on a milk wagon in January the 2nd of 1908, and I wouldn't have been 7 years old until March 11th of 1908. When you do that today, they'd want to prosecute you. Didn't do me any harm. March the 11th, my son and daughter gave me my 80th birthday, and they had open house from 3 o'clock till 9, and didn't get any birthday cards. Some of those are from all over the United States. There's at least 8 or 10 in there that I would know the people if they walked in the front door, but I don't know who they are by name. There are people that's been here with decoys. More so than the funeral business, see. I started piddling with decoys the same summer I started the undertaking business. Because I'd have only figured I'd have 20 to 25 funerals the first year if I was lucky. And I had to find something to keep them hands busy. And I ended up with Mr. Sam Barnes for 2 years, and he passed away with pneumonia, and I continued right on from there. Had a lot of pleasure out of the decoys. I'd like to take you in after a while and show you some of my work in the last 57 years. My nephew, grandson, started a ice cream parlor up here a couple months ago. And he called it the Ice Jam. And he used the ice flood of 1910. And I was at a Labinum with my father the day that that ice broke up. And they had a big granite block warehouse out on the wharf. And he and Mr. McGonigal went out there to get the books and things out of the safe because they knew it was going to be bad because the ice was quite thick. And when they heard the roar of the ice starting to break up, and they come and should come back up on the hill, and by the time they got up on the hill, they were in water up to their waist. That's how fast that water raised. It goes down and hit the B&O bridge, just backed up like that. Only about 10, 12 minutes, and it break loose at the bridge and then went on out. But that was the first ice gorge I remember. Five or six of us thought we were smart, so we played hooky from school a couple of days later. We were going to Port Deposit. We heard how bad it was over there. We said, oh, we'd get a ride from Prairieville. And we walked from Havre de Grace to Port Deposit, saw what we went to see. Ice was, 5 and 6 foot deep on the streets up there. We had to walk all the way home. Nobody come along to pick us up. Good, animal. Then I had to walk to Mount Felix after I got home. We've had the thing about our younger days. We had ice on that river when they were cutting ice out there. It would get so thick that they'd have to go back and cut it where they cut it 2 weeks before. Keep it from, because it got too thick to handle. I made one jackass trip one Saturday. I walked over from Mount Felix and walked over to Cook's Quarry, cut on the ice, and skated to Havre de Grace where the crowd was. The four or five of us decided we were going to escape to the island, Pissussi Island, about 3 miles down. We opened our coats and went down flying. We had a wonderful time. We got ready to come back, and that wind was had picked up from the time we left, gotten stronger. Mm-hmm. But we ended up coming around the shore all the way home. Mm. You talking about a tired bunch of kids, we were tired that night too. Well, I don't know, I just feel very fortunate. We've been in business that long, had the health. Money don't mean anything if you don't have your health. Mm-hmm. Money don't mean a thing. Mm. I don't know, I just wonder sometimes. Especially when you go to these nursing homes. It's not that they're good to the individual, but it's what the individual has to look at all day. Mm-hmm. You can't say you got to stay in your room. Mm-hmm. That'd be a prison. Mm-hmm. I don't mind going to Angel Hill. I'm not afraid of that. I got a lot of friends up there. Mm-hmm. But I hope and pray I never have to go to a nursing home. Not that they're not good. Mm-hmm. People live longer and all that, but just to live longer, 2 or 3, 4 years, 5 years, mm-hmm. I don't worry.
Well, now, as a child, what do you remember? What was your childhood like? What was Havre de Grace like as you were growing up?
Well, Havre de Grace was a small town when I delivered milk here. We had 14 or 15 saloons in Havre de Grace. And I delivered milk at every one of them. Until 1916, they had local option. And my father took quite an interest in trying to get those saloons closed. And they won by just a few votes. Mm. Havre de Grace went dry. The next morning, all the saloons, all of the families connected with the saloons, said no milk from now on. But we got back to the post office. Dad had about 14 or 15 gallons of milk left over in the milk wagon. Some fellow said to him, said, "Mr. Mitchell, don't worry about it. You stay close to your telephone." And he said, "You'll have enough customers tomorrow morning to fill that gap." And we bought milk from that day until we quit the milk wagon. So we didn't lose anything. I delivered the first gallon of milk that was delivered at Harford Memorial Hospital. And in 19, I know it had to open before the racetrack opened. The racetrack opened the spring of 1912. So the hospital opened late in 11 or early in 12, and I'm not just sure which. Mm-hmm. But in that period. Mm. I go back, a lot of people say, "Oh, I don't see how you remember when the Pennsylvania Railroad that's there now was built." My mother at that time, my dad started a milk wagon late in 1906. Mm-hmm. But up until that time, my mother delivered butter and eggs in Havre de Grace on a Thursday. And then I took that money and done her shopping. Mm. And she used to leave me up at the old Catholic parsonage, which was only 50 feet from the railroad. Mm-hmm. And when I was about five and a half years old. But I watched those trains go through Havre de Grace, watched the gates go down, I watched the fill being put in for the present railroad. Mm. And boys that lived right here in town, but they lived downtown, they don't remember the railroad at all, older than I am. Mm. Often talk tell a line about it. Said, "Madison, I don't have any recollection of it being built." He lived right down at the park. Mm. I don't know. I know one thing, my generation, I'd seen the best of this world. I started gunning out on the flats in 1920, and it was, without a doubt, the best gunning ground in the world. Today we got nothing after it. Put in the disposal plants, gonna clear up the rivers. What did they do? They put a lot of chemicals in the river that killed all the algae, killed all the grass, no fish mount anything, no ducks stay here, no feed for them. And there's very little area here for fish that do come up to spawn. You can't get any further than the dam, and it wouldn't do any good to put a ladder on the dam because the state has put all kinds of fish up the river. And what did they do? Come right back through the dam. They won't stay up there. It's not their nature to stay in back of the dam.
Were there lots of these things when you, as you remember growing up here?
Was there lack of which?
Were there lots of fish and
oh my.
Ducks?
We had Cousin Charlie Silvers and his brother had two floats up the river, used to fish for herring every spring, and they packed herring and shipped them all over. Salt herring, they call them. And my gosh, shad and rockfish were, men made their living off of it. The day you'd starve to death trying to make a living off it. They had to go to Bush River or further down the bay, but where they caught shad and fish in those days, there wasn't any. There isn't any. There enough, not enough to make a living off of. And the whole river has changed. The disposal plants and the chemicals that they put in the river have done more harm than the sewage going into the river did. Man has got a lot to learn yet. I had one other experience in life when Commander John Rogers landed an aircraft in up on the farm at Mount Zion. That's right across from Mount Felix. You know where the two brick houses are? Well, I was raised at Mount Felix. That's the furthest one back. He landed at a time in the afternoon that I had gone out after the cows, and we saw that plane circling, and we didn't bother anymore about the cows. I was within 50 feet of him when he landed. And he said, "Madison, get to the house and get all the hay rope and tell John Lisby to get some stakes. We got to take a rope around this plane. If you don't, the crowd will tear it apart." So my father went to the house and got his hay rope, and the colored fellow got the one up at Mount Zion, and Dad brought, he didn't have any stakes cut, so he brought bean poles. Saw the tops off of them, drove them in the ground. And it was a ball game in Haverty Grass that afternoon, it was Saturday afternoon. And people had horses and buggies and bicycles at the ballpark. And they never stopped to get in their horse and buggy, they run up there. That's how excited they were. They thought the plane had crashed, see. That's really what they thought. Next, he stayed there Saturday night. We had two people on guard all night, and there was a crowd there all night. There wasn't a minute during the night that there wasn't people coming and going. And Sunday morning, he said, I said, "What time are you going to take off?" John, he said, "Oh, I don't know." He said, "Why? Why are you interested?" I said, "I got to go on a milk wagon tomorrow morning. I want to see you take off." He said, "Well, we won't take off till you get back to Maryland Grass." So when Dad and I got back, we didn't even take our horse home. We tied it out on what's 155 now. And went over, and he and I and the colored fella helped take up stakes and her cables and move the people out of the road, and John took off for Annapolis. poor devil eventually killed in New York Navy Yard. I never thought I'd live to bury him. Funny part about that, I was raised on a dairy farm. And when I was 7 years old, I said I was going to be a funeral director. Never been to a funeral, didn't know what to talk about. But I had a great uncle in Baltimore, E. Madison Mitchell. And I didn't think it was anybody like him. Mm-hmm. I was going to be just like him. Crazy, but that's the way it worked out. I got his mug back there. He used to come up on a midnight train, and the dad would take him out on the flats gunning, see, and stay at the old Harvard House in Harvard Grass, which is across from where the American Legion is now. It's an apartment now. And there's a colored barber shop right next to the Harvard House. Jody Corsi run it. He was a white barber shop, I mean by that. He wouldn't cut a colored man's hair unless he was home. He'd cut it at home, but he wouldn't cut it at the shop. In 1927, I was in there to get a haircut one day, and he said, "Mr. Mitchell, what about Mr. E. Madison Mitchell?" I told him what relation he was. He said, "Where is he?" I said, "Well, he died in 1916. "Oh," he said, "I didn't know that. I got his mug here. Would you like to have it?" I said, "I sure would." I still got it back there. I don't know. You talked to Mr. Spencer. His father, Hugh Spencer, his father operated one of those floats that I talked about up the river. And I imagine Hugh's got the best pictures of those floats as anybody that I know of. He used to spend, I guess he worked on them some, because he was about 5 or 6 years older than I am, about 85, 86. And he was old enough to work on them Saturdays and Sundays. And I'm sure he did. But I never worked on them. I used to go up there with Bartle Silver Friday night, and come back Saturday night. But you talking about any fish in the river, they put out the horn saying one Monday morning, and that covers quite an area. And then they have what they call a black seine, that they fished out of that big seine where the fish were in that net. It was too much. It was too heavy. They couldn't possibly bring them on a boat, on the float. See, they had an apron tapered like that down to the bottom of the river, and they brought those fish and net up and worked them from there. Well, they worked that fish in that net from Monday morning until Saturday night, and then took the net up because they were afraid the fish would suffocate before Monday morning. And Mr. Silvers wouldn't work on Sunday, no matter how many fish was there. He just wouldn't work on Sunday. And there was two other floats down the river. Houlihan Hoagland, that's a hex of a name. But they're the ones that owned those floats.
So it sounds like this was a real fishing community around here.
Well, fishing and gunning, sports gunning. Local people didn't have money to do much gunning. They did a little bushwhacking, no blinds in those days. But Dolan and DuPont, and I guess it was seven or eight different rigs that gunned from here. Jess Popper gunned at Dolan. Dolan boys, and Wilbeck gunned DuPonts. I don't know, Jim Currier had another set of sports, and the Lauder boys, and Captain Moore, I'm trying to think which, Billy Moore, they had an outfit that gun sports from Baltimore. They're the only Baltimore outfit that I know of. But those days, they'd get anywhere from 150 to 300 canvasbacks a day and think nothing about it. It was in the 1920s that they cut it down to 25 per man, 100 to a boat. That means you had to have 4 licenses on a boat to kill 100 ducks. Now you can't even kill one. That's the difference of this flex. Of course, the gunner never killed the ducks. They blame it on the gunner, but the gunner never killed them. The drought that we had in Canada in 33 and 34, you see, the drought didn't happen until after the eggs had hatched and the young ones. And the drakes got up and flew away to water. And the hens stayed with the young ones and died with the young ones. When they came here in 32, there was about 14 hens to 16 drakes. When they came back in 34, it was 21 drakes to one hen. That's what happened to the canvasbacks. In those days, we had practically all the canvasbacks in the United States on the eastern seaboard. Now there's more in California than there are on the eastern seaboard. Even the middle flyway, the Pacific, Mississippi flyway. They got canvasbacks in that flyway now. So they're scattered all over the country. It'll take many years for them to come back, but they'll come back. Ducks Unlimited, the Canadian government, the United States government, have done an awful lot to preserve the duck population. Of course, the goose population, it's increasing out of proportion. I don't know what they're going to do. The Canadian farmers are really up in arms about the Canadian geese. Of course, the snow geese and the blue geese is, the snow goose has increased, tripled its population in the last 10 years.
Well, now, how did you get interested in making decoys?
Well, when I started in business here, Mr. Sam Barnes painted my original building. He was a cousin. And about, I came here the 8th of July, and about the, 21st, last part of July, he stopped in to see my mother one day, and I was in her house where I lived at that time. And he said, "Yeah, I helped the boy get started, now I'm behind making decoys." Well, I said, "Cousin Sam, you help me out, spare time, I'll help you out. What do you know about making decoys?" That's the same thing you did when you started, nothing. And it was the truth. So, I whatever spare time I had, I went down there and worked and helped him. And as I say, he only lived 2 years. And when he died, his wife had quite a few orders for that year. And I said, "I'll make them, and Florence will paint them." That was his daughter. She done most of the painting. I got them made. Went down the house, talked to Florence. Mother said, "Didn't you know about Florence?" I said, "What do you mean?" Said, "She got married about 2 weeks ago and moved to Philadelphia and not coming back." I had a terrible time that year trying to get those decoys painted. I don't know. I've enjoyed it over the years. I don't know. Tried to make a good decoy, and I built up too much of a reputation. Never charged enough for them. They're getting 4 times as much for a decoy today that I got for them. I made them as a hobby. I didn't make it for a living.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to, something just to keep me home, keep me out of mischief. And I still painting, but I don't make any more.
Mm.
I sold it to Bill Collins, boy, it worked for me about 10 and a half years, and he said he had enough of the undertaking business. He didn't want that 24 hours, and he wanted to go someplace at night. He wanted to go. He didn't want to tell everybody where he's going and what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were in the undertaking business, they don't want you tomorrow. They want you now.
Mm-hmm.
I put 47 years in Havre de Grace, and I was only out of Havre de Grace 11 nights.
Mm.
The last 5 years, I've had some very good vacations. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
I took a bus trip last summer all the way around the outside of the United States from York, Pennsylvania. Red Line Bus Company. There's only 24 of us in the big bus.
Mm.
We had a restroom on the bus. It was a beautiful bus, but almost a new one. We covered 22 states. They went over to Mexico 3 times, but I only went once. I never got out of the bus the day I did go. I don't like any part of northern Mexico.
Mm.
They can have it. I went to Carlsbad Cavern one day while I was over there, and it was a remarkably good trip. I'm going to take a nice one this summer. I'm going up to New England and Canada, and I'll be in that area for 21 days on a bus tour.
Mm-hmm.
Worst part about it is I got to go to New York City to get started. Three years ago, I took a bus tour of Europe. Went to England, and from England to Holland, Holland to Germany, Germany to Switzerland, Switzerland to Austria. And the smallest country, of course, we were in was Liechtenstein.
Mm.
And from there to Italy, Spain, Monaco, and back to France, and came home from Paris.
Hmm.
That was a nice trip. That was a bus trip, too.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
We had two buses, one in England, but then we, our bus that stayed with us the rest of the trip picked us up in Netherlands, and we went across on the ferry.
Mm-hmm.
Now then, they got a, what do they call these boats that skip the water?
Ferries?
Yeah, but it's right on the end of my tongue. This, the one that they, my daughter went over on last year, had 4 airplane propellers on it.
Hmm.
That was its power. But it just skims the top of the water. It takes 50 automobiles and I don't know how many passengers, but it's a certain devil of a big boat.
Mm-hmm.
To realize that it practically raises up out of the water and just skims the top of the water.
Mm.
What do they call those darn boats? I was on one in Italy. I can't think of what the dickens the name of it was, but it was only about 60 passengers.
Mm-hmm.
And no freight, just passengers.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, was it hard getting into the funeral director business here?
Well, I guess, see, Mr. Pennington had been in business many, many, many years before I came here.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Bailey at Darlington, of course, Mr. Tarring at Aberdeen, and as I say, I was raised up on 155. And there was, I imagine, politics played a lot of part in it, because Mr. Bunning had been mayor, was mayor for 16 years after I came here. I mean, he was mayor when I came, and he had made quite a few enemies, because they were beginning to call Tarring at Aberdeen, Patterson at Prairieville, and Bailey at Darlington. They were doing at least 16 or 18 funerals a year out of the community, see. And I was promised if I would come and open the business that I would at least get that, and hoping it could get more, see. I had 22 funerals the first year, which I thought I had a lot of money when I started in business, and I was just about as much money in debt at the end of the first year as it was.
Well, let's see. What did people use decoys? Was it primarily to use with hunt, with gunning?
When I made decoys, 99% of them were used for gunning purposes. Today, they're used as a collector's item. And if you could fill the orders, it's something that's developed all over the United States. From Atlantic City to the Pacific Ocean. And Canada on south. You take those ducks that I signed there. I can take a pair of them to a Ducks Unlimited show, and they sell whatever's donated, say, auction it off. They get $350, $400 a pair for them. We got $479 up in Harford County. That's a whole lot more money than you could contribute. It's just because I'm lucky enough to be on the collector's list and still be alive. The Ward boys and myself, their decoys are outrageous. Like, plenty of them worth $1,000, $1,500. That they sold for about $5 or $6. Well, those canvas backs that he's got there at 75 for about $8 or $9. And he there's plenty of people who would give him from 150 on up for him. It don't make sense, but that's the way the world moves. And these hobbyists want something, why, they're going to get it one way or another.
How do you go about, how would you go about making them? How do you make them?
Well, of course we have a lathe that we turn the bodies out on, but the heads and all are whittled by hand. They're still that way. A machine to make those heads costs $45,000 to $50,000. And you couldn't do that in a small business. That's the trouble with my funeral business. A new hearse today is about $34,000. That's going to change the whole, because we've only been incorporated a year, and we're going to have to start a replacement fund with 4 or 5 years to be able to buy a new hearse, and that's gonna hurt. I don't know. I just don't know how it's gonna work out. It scares me. That's the truth about it. When I started in business, a grave, opening a grave, was from $8 to $12. That's Harford County or Cecil County. Today, it's $175. Harford Memorial and Bel Air Memorial. You know where I mean. $270. I had a funeral in New York Wednesday, $427 for opening the grave. I mean, labor. See, they sold those lots cheap 25, 30, 40 years ago. that didn't put a tenth enough money in perpetual care. Well, they can't come back to you and say you got to put $250 on your perpetual care of your lot. Mm-hmm. So what they do, they charge you enough money for opening your grave to help maintain the cemetery. Mm. That's all over the country. It isn't just this state.
Yeah.
It's all over the country.
Mm.
It's, I don't know. Because when I started in business, a helper was getting, what, $75, $80 a week? And extra labor was getting 75, 80 cents an hour.
Mm.
Now they want $7, $8 an hour. Get any kind of a painter around here today, he wants $10 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Carpenter wants $12 an hour. Every time you turn around, it's money, 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 money.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Was it hard starting out in business here in 24?
Well, I was very lucky. I was very lucky. I had a lot of help. Of course, I was well known here because I drove milk wagon here for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that did a lot of good.
Hmm.
But I had 20 rough years because, as I told you, Rich Pennington was mayor. He had charge of the police. He appointed the medical guy, the coroner. He was on the board at the hospital. And they pulled every trick they could pull against me.
Hmm.
No question about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned the other cheek. Didn't make any enemies. It's paid off.
Hmm.
That's all I can tell you.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel much of the depression around here?
Well, when Roosevelt closed the banks, if my bank hadn't opened, I wouldn't be here today.
Hmm.
I had about 7 or 8 funerals during that bank holiday. And every one of them was in the First National Bank in Haverty Grounds.
Hmm.
And they didn't have a dime. I mean, I was lucky. I had a funeral in Baltimore that my uncle had assisted me on. And the lady called me and said she'd come a certain day, she'd straighten up with me. I took my bill down. This was on a Friday. And, of course, she knew the situation with my uncle, so he used his hearse, and I didn't want to drive my hearse all the way to Baltimore at that time. It was in, 34? 33. Because Roosevelt was elected in 32, so he took office March the 4th of 33.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first thing he did was close all the banks.
Mm.
Well, anyhow, I went down, and she gave me a check for it. And something came up. She said she had to go down to the bank. I said, good, I'll take you down to the bank. You can identify me. And I get this check cash, and I can go over to Muzzle's office and straighten up with him. She said, that's fine. I'm glad to. Well, that funeral was around $1,400, and that was a lot of money at that time.
Mm-hmm.
For a funeral.
Mm-hmm.
But she wanted a big mahogany and all this, that, and the other. And she had plenty of money. It didn't make any difference. She was a cousin. Well, anyhow, she took me down to the bank, and I got the cash money. Went over and straightened up with my uncle. Came home. Of course, it was Monday morning before I could go to the bank. I went to the bank Monday morning. The bank was closed. You'll have to start a new account. I said, I'll be damned if I can. I'm going to keep every cent I got right in my pocket. Well, you'll spend it, I said. If it do, I'll spend it for a good purpose. And those funerals, people didn't have money enough to buy a piece of flowers.
Mm.
And if I hadn't had that cash money, I couldn't draw a dime on what was in the bank. And at that time, 50% of my business was outside of the city limits, out in the country on the farms and what have you. Mm-hmm. And they never carried any insurance. Mm-hmm. If 4 or 5 days or a week, 10 days after a funeral, they'd come down and say, "I'd just like to have my bill." Take that bill, go up to the bank, borrow that much money, come down and pay it. And when that happened, they couldn't borrow a dime. Only thing they could borrow was improvements on the farm, government backed. They mm-hmm. bought it some kind of a farm loan situation. Mm-hmm. The bank couldn't loan them a dime. Mm-hmm. I owned the house, stayed in business for 3 or 4 years. That's the way it, that's the only way the depression actually hurt me. Mm-hmm. But I survived it. My dad helped me. I didn't spend any money. Mm-hmm. My wife took rumors. We'd done everything.
Mm. Well, now, what was Havre de Grace like? You know, was it helpful? Was it a prosperous town for you to have good business, or was
well, Havre de Grace has grown from about what 3,700, 3,824 to around 10,000 now. See, mm-hmm. it hasn't grown like Bel Air and Aberdeen. Mm-hmm. Bel Air is the one that's grown, and the community around it. The unfortunate part of Havre de Grace. We only have a quarter of a circle to do business in. The river's there on one side, the government proving grounds on the other, the south side. Mm-hmm. So you only got the northwest quarter. Mm-hmm. Most any other business that you want in Harford County have a complete circle to do business in. Mm-hmm. Look, and you wouldn't believe it, but that river is just the same as a 90-foot wall. Hmm. Mr. Patterson's at Aiken, and I'm in Havre de Grace. His mother came from Havre de Grace. He don't average one funeral a year here, and I don't average one funeral a year in Cecil County. Hmm. They just don't cross that river. Mm-hmm. The only thing they cross that river for is a bank, nothing else. Hmm. Of course, they come over here to shop. Mm-hmm. But, and they use our hospital in preference to Elkton. They stick pretty close to Cecil County Funeral Directors and Harvard County sticks pretty close to Harvard County Funeral Directors. Mm-hmm. They just don't cross the river. Hmm.
It seems people have always talked about Havre de Grace have an awful lot of personalities that were real, it was real difficult to please everybody. And
it always is. We're having the mayor's election next month. And there's always petty things that we have a yacht basin down at our city park. And those folks kind of felt like they only paid just a very, very small wharf charges. Mm-hmm. But why should the city taxpayers furnish them with a place to put their boat? And the auditor said that they had to pay for themselves or they're going to close it. Mm-hmm. Then when they raised the rate of the slips, they all blew up about that. Mm. Now then, our city council and mayor have trying to put in an ordinance for zoning. Uh-huh. And up until now, you can build anything, any place, that you want in Havre de Grace. Uh-huh. And that's the way the contractors want it. They want to do as they please. The real estate men want to do as they please. Uh-huh. We're the only town in Harford County that don't have a zoning and don't have specifications on how a piece of property, where a piece of property should be built. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be an interesting election. I don't mm-hmm. know how it's going to work out. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Did you know Millard Tidings?
Oh, very well. I knew Millard when he first started in politics. And Miller done a lot of good for Harford County. A lot of good for Harford County. But he was still 100% politician. He was 100% politician. What's our new president going to accomplish? He's got his hands full. But as far as inflation is concerned, as long as the unions demand 10, 12, 15% increase in wages and benefits and what have you, there is no way. You wonder why the big corporations go to foreign countries to manufacture things. It's the unions and Social Security. It's a terrific proposition. You take a little man in a little store, got one or two, three clerks, and realize how much business he's got to do just to pay Social Security. You pay half, he pays half. And then, of course, he pays full on himself. And that, they don't have that when they go overseas. There's a lot of things about unions that have done a lot of good, but the unions are too strong now. They've got to be, something has got to be done. You take a boy who's working for the telephone company, but they don't want to belong to the union. The union don't care whether they belong to them or not. But they take the dues, union dues, out of their wages before they get their wages, whether they belong to the union or not. And that ought not to be constitutional. You can tell me I got to pay dues of something that I don't want to belong to. It's wrong.
Well, now, people joke about sometimes funeral directors, or they have their own, you know, humor and that kind of thing. Have you had experiences in your business that, you know, things that have been sort of funny and such a serious work as yours?
Well, I try not to let something like that come up. I don't allow any foolishness around my business. Don't allow any crazy tricks. I've heard tell of all kinds of tricks being pulled on employees and things around the undertaking business, but it's not allowed here. I never allowed it when I worked with my uncle, and don't allow it here. You do some crazy things. He might go to a church someday and leave the church truck home. That can be a little embarrassing. I never forget one funeral I had up to Webster Community Church. He was the superintendent of the Sunday school. We got about a mile of the church and I realized my church truck was home. And that's about 5 miles out in the country, so. I said, well, don't worry about it. What do you mean, don't worry about it? What are we going to do? I said, don't worry about it. Because I went up, used to go up to church, to church suppers, so. And I knew he was superintendent of the Sunday school. So the first thing I did, I walked out in the Sunday school room, got four kids' chairs, turned them upside down, and set them in there, put the casket on that. Everybody thought I did it on purpose. Because he was superintendent of the Sunday school. And there's a few little ends like that to get. I try not to let crazy things happen. Mostly you can head them off if you're concentrating on what you're doing.
Are people sometimes difficult, have been, you know, not really thinking and have done things, you know, when they want to arrange for a funeral or something?
Well,
or that, I guess that's your job to think for them.
And what your most trouble in the funeral business today, and always has been, and always will be, you run into a family that don't have any money.
Oh.
And your welfare and your Social Security won't get you out of the cemetery today.
Mm.
They won't dig the grave and furnish a vault.
Mm-hmm.
And most cemeteries won't let you put in a plain grave anymore.
Mm.
You got to use a vault of some kind. So those propositions are becoming quite a headache.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's only one answer to it, but there's no law that says it has to be. You run into a welfare case today, the only way you can handle it and break even, not make any money, I mean break even, is cremated.
Mm-hmm.
But the family don't want it cremated. Mm-hmm. So you got to work something out, but it's getting complicated, I'll tell you. Because
mm-hmm.
the cemetery wants their money before you bury it.
Mm-hmm.
They tell you what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have any money, who's going to do it?
Mm-hmm.
The undertaker's going to do it.
Yeah.
And with the prices today, you're getting to the point you hardly can afford to do it.
Have you seen much changes in Havoc Grace in the way of the way people are and things like that?
Well, when I started delivering milk in Havoc Grace in 1908, there might have been 25 bathrooms in Havoc Grace. There wasn't over 30 or 40 families in Harvey Grass that could have afforded a horse and buggy if they wanted one. Now what have you got in 1980? This is 81. They all own an automobile. Most of the families own two automobiles. They all got a bathroom and a kitchen that cost more than the homes cost in 1980.
Mm.
Just the bathroom and kitchen alone. There was only, all the streets in Harvey Grass were oyster shell streets.
Hmm.
Those days. Now all your streets are McAdam. You had wooden boardwalks in practically three-fourths of your town. The rest of it was slate.
Hmm.
My gosh, we had the one school that was 11 grades, was all in one building.
Mm-hmm.
About 500 of us in school when I went there. Now you got an elementary school, you got a middle school, you got a high school, you got an auditorium, you got a gymnasium. One big change, years ago, all of our drugstores had good soda fountains. You could sit at a table and eat ice cream and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Now then, all of them discontinued that quite a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the only one around here now is the one my grandson started about 2 months ago. And he didn't think he needed too big a place. I think he can seat 16. And plenty of times he don't have room enough to seek the people to come in.
Hmm.
And they come in bunches. It just maybe an hour or two in a day, you don't do any business.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing you know, there's 8 or 10 or 12 or 14 in there.
Hmm.
He started it that time of year So by warm weather, he'd know what he had to do and what he had to have and what have you. And he'll be all right. Because it'll remain a small business on account of the size of establishment that he started. But he's having, seems to be enjoying it, and, but he just can't get over I guarantee you, what you take in isn't all profit. The first thing I told him when he opened up, don't get it in your head, you got to have a big salary. You're living home with your mother and father for a while. Don't take a darn cent out of the business that you don't need to take out until you find out where you're going. Because that's the average little gas station startup. They got to have an employer so they can do as they please. They got to have a big salary. And they've drawn $250 a month, a week salary, and they're only making about $210 a week. And in about 2 years' time, they're so far in debt, they don't know whether they're going or coming. It's a small business man has to operate it according to what his income is. He's learning. He's learning the hard way, but he's learning.
Well, when you started in your decoys, did you think that it would turn out like it has into a profitable?
I started it as a hobby, and I tried to keep it that way. Because I only worked at it when I wasn't busy with funerals. Telephone rang. I did just like it did with you. I get up, answer the telephone, and if there's a call, I put my brushes in solvent and go on. I clean up when they come back. I got to it again to clean up. Maybe wouldn't get back for a week or 10 days at a time. And I know I didn't have any idea that that I could sell more decoys than I could make. I couldn't fill my orders 35, 40 years ago, and couldn't fill one out of 10, didn't have the time. I run it strictly as a hobby, just some place to go and keep my hands occupied. Made a lot of friends, a lot of friends. We had, and my birthday there was the 11th of March. It was about 235, 40 that registered. My daughter's and the son had an open house for me. There's some of the birthday cards there. And, I've had calls and different ones. Sorry I couldn't get to your birthday party. I was doing this or I was doing that. Well, you saw the plaque in there that I really appreciated from funeral director of Harford County. And it, Art said that hard to get that many funeral directors to agree to one thing. But they've all been nice to me, and I've been good to them.
Is there cooperation between funeral directors around here?
I have a wonderful cooperation with all of them. Foster in Bel Air, McComas at Abington, Tarring at Aberdeen, and Ross across the river. Of course, the other two boys, I've worked for John up at Delta a number of times. He's been in trouble. But the one at Forest Hill, I've never had any occasion to work for, help out, but it's very friendly as far as that's concerned. I don't know, that was my motto from the time I was a kid, make friends, no enemies. Tramp on your toe, just pull your toe out, keep on going. it's holding a grudge, and it's easy to make an enemy. Much easier to make an enemy than it is a friend. Mm-hmm. And if you want to be happy in this life, you want friends, you don't want enemies.
What was your school days like in Havre de Grace?
Well, as I told you, I was on a milk wagon all the time I went to school. And of course, when I first started the school, they played football. And I never was old enough when they cut football out to play football. I used to practice with the boys playing center. Mm-hmm. And the vice principal, he used to raise Cain because I was so small and the rest of them so big. Then we went to playing soccer. I played soccer for 4 or 5 years. We had a good team, very good team. But those days, they had a line drawn. The boys stayed on their side of the field. The girls played on their side of the field. And if you didn't want to get balled out or get kept in after school or something, you better get caught over on the girls' side playing. Boy, that's all changed today, I guarantee you. I don't know what they're going to do to our high school out here. It was built back in the 30s or early 40s, I don't know, somewhere in there. They're going to tear part of it down and rebuild it. Mm. Just like they did our hospital. That wing of the hospital was built in the 40s during the war. Mm-hmm. They tore the whole damn thing down and built a new wing there. Said it wasn't fireproof. I don't know. Money.
Do you remember when they first started thinking about building the hospital?
Oh, yeah. They bought Cap Baker's home and started the original hospital. That is 1911. I ate many a meal in that house before it was a hospital. And Mrs. Baker and my mother were cousins. And I say she delivered butter and eggs, and they'd invite her, Lily, come on in to dinner. Ate a number of meals in there. And as I said before, I delivered the first gallon of milk that went to the hospital when they first opened.
Were people in the community really supportive of getting the hospital?
Oh yes, definitely. I mean, because it was quite a proposition to put a sick person on a train and take them to Ball or the hospital. Or no ambulances. You had to make arrangements for some way to get them from the train all over to the hospital and all that. Harford County was very much Cecil County. And this lower part of Cecil County very, very much interested in getting the hospital opened up. But the main reason the hospital opened when it did, the racetrack started out here the spring of 1912. And they wouldn't open the racetrack until there was a local hospital. And that's what brought the hospital to the head at the time. Probably been many years before we'd had a hospital that hadn't been for that. My great uncle E. Madison Mitchell was interested in Pimlico, and he got my father through, of course, how they formed that racetrack commission up here, I don't know. I was too young to be that much interested in it. But my father bought this piece of property for the racetrack commission, so they wouldn't know what it was all about. See. And boost the price sky high. And I guess they started in 1911 to build in the racetrack out there.
Hmm.
Also had a cottage out there. I rode Pony Blue on that track before it was open. That was a big thrill, be on a racetrack with a pony with a racehorse alongside him. And said, they didn't want him to run. They wanted to, they were just jogging him. And he would, as long as the pony was alongside of him, the jockey, the trainer, wouldn't have any trouble holding him down. If the pony wasn't there, he wanted to run, see. But he wouldn't get ahead of that pony. That was quite a thrill. I was out there two Saturdays, and they let me ride Pony Blue. Right there, as soon as they get off the buck wagon, Dad would take me out there. He'd come get me about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 3:30 or 4 o'clock. But you see what happened to the racetrack. We had a racetrack up until World War II. And after World War II, they couldn't get any trains to stop here. And then they sold their racing dates to Laurel, Bowie, and Pimlico. And they made money out of the deal. Somebody did. For some reason. I forget the old gentleman's name that had charge of the National Guard. He had a lot of stock in the racetrack. And he was the one that sold it, transferred it, sold it over to the National Guard. So that was the fastest track, drive the quickest of any track in the state of Maryland. But it was sand loam soil, and the moisture just, it dried out very quickly. I guess it was muddy when it was muddy like any other track, but it worked up and dried out quick. But the racetrack never done any good for average gas.
Why is that?
Well, it brought bookmaking here, it brought prostitution here, it brought gambling here of all kinds. And they hung over from they raced in the spring and fall. Howard Grass from Little Chicago at one time. You could bet a nickel or $10,000 on a racehorse if you wanted to. And every night there was crap game being run here. Of course, we knew who was gone and who was protecting them and paying Bel Air off as well as the Haverty Grass. We eventually got rid of the clique that was operating or letting them run. Got different ones in Bel Air and different sheriffs. We got them closed up. Got the prostitution out of the town, but it took get rid of the racetrack first to do it. There was too much money there backing it. When I came here, it was rough conditions in every area. We're lucky enough. I wouldn't say there's no gambling here, but none that I know of. No amount to anything, whatever it is. There's always a bookmaker someplace. I don't know how they operate today, but those days you could walk right in and make your bets and you're just going after racetrack. Can't do it anymore.
Were there certain areas of town that it was predominating in? It was just all of them?
It was from the middle of the town to the upper end and out towards the racetrack out over Route 7. Actually, one place out there had a great big pink elephant out in front of it. It was known from California to Canada. Oh, that was... Right, I remember having the grass racetrack. I've been to the pink elephant. First year I'm sick. You couldn't have been more public than that. That was a big elephant. There wasn't a little tiny elephant. Yeah, but they used to collect every week. Who divided it up? Because we knew who divided it up, but nobody would ever say. He'd find himself in trouble, I guess. I'll never forget one place. I used to go there once in a while, hunting pallbearers. And the boss escorted me, didn't take me by the arm, but he followed me to the door. We got outside the door, he said, "Madison, I tell you, anytime you want any of my boys that's in here for pallbearers, call me, and I'll contact them for you. But God, don't come here yourself and have to talk to them." I said, "Why, what's the matter?" He said, "They won't make a bet while you're in here." They wouldn't. I had two of those places I had to quit going to. Somebody for an automobile or for a ball bearer. They wouldn't make a bet while I was there. They thought maybe I'd report them. I never report them. It wasn't going to do me any good to report them. I'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
Now, I think the town has changed for the better. I like to see it. I like to see a building code and zoning go into effect. If you don't, heck, the doctors are ruining Union Avenue now. They're from one end of it to the other. Whatever during these piece of property on the street, build an office out of it. Our worst trouble in our regrets right now is parking. Don't have the proper parking. None of us. It's all included. And I'm too old to start a new one. You don't have 175, $200,000 a day. You can't build a funeral. There's no way. If you go in debt for two-thirds of that and pay that rate of interest today, where are you? You're working for interest, man. Interest is only good for the man that's got money. It's no good for the small businessman. It's no good for the man that wants to build a home. It's no good for the man that wants to buy an automobile. I just don't get what the public or the banks and the government are trying to do with this high interest. I just don't know. It's coming down gradually. Maybe it'll come back to never. It'll never get back to normal. My son's mortgage is 5%. What do you want? I guess the minimum you can get mortgage today is about 13.5. And they got them up to 30 and 40 year mortgages. Interest costs more than a house cost. I don't know whether it'll ever work out, how they're going to work it out. I think they got the money market now down to 13 something. That means they've got to get 15 or 15.5% interest if they're going to pay that kind of interest on them, on those money markets of debt. Where they're making their money is a sucker that's only got a little bit of money and paying him 5.5% interest.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they're making. But they're still charging you 15.5% interest.
Mm-hmm.
They're not making that right. It's not right. Yeah, it's the only person that's any good for is a man that's got a lot of money. He don't need that interest because Uncle Sam's going to take a third of it away from him. Uncle Sam's going to get his regardless of what else happens.
Well, is there anything else you'd like, we'd like to talk about? Or
I don't know the thing. Present time, I don't know the thing.